Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Julia Koiber. Welcome to the John Koiber Show. My dad has helped thousands of people around the world lead happier and more successful lives. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you already built your life, but now you need to shore up some weak spots, this show will help you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So today I'm titling the text, There's More Than You Need. There's more than you need. And I think some of us at least struggle with that mindset that there is not enough to go around. And some people would call it the scarcity mentality. In fact, people that, at least when in my circles, they kind of get more motivated when they think that there's not enough to go around. And we'll get into that in just a bit. But the foundation of the texture today is found over in Genesis chapter 3. If you want to turn over there in your Bibles. Genesis chapter 3, sharing from the New American Standard, and then we're going to transfer over to the Message paraphrase of this text. In Genesis chapter 3, it's an ancient story, but it illustrates a mindset that I think many, many people go through in life, that they think that they're going to miss out on something if they don't cross a certain line. And many times that line is a very negative line or a line of ethics or integrity. So in Genesis chapter 3, it talks about, it says, Now the serpent was more crafty than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, Indeed, has God said, You shall not eat from any tree of the garden? So the woman said to the serpent, From the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat. But, verse 3, From the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God has said, You shall not eat from it or touch it, or you will die. The serpent said to the woman, You surely will not die, verse 5, for God knows that in the day that you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. When the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was a delight to her eyes, and that the tree was desirable to make one wise, she took from its fruit and ate. And she gave also to her husband with her, and he ate. Then the eyes of both of them were opened, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves a loin covering. Let me kind of paraphrase that down, thanks to Eugene Peterson. He said, The serpent was clever and more clever than any wild animal God had made. He spoke to the woman, Do I understand that God told you not to eat of any tree in the garden? The woman said to the serpent, Not at all. We can eat from the trees of the garden. It's only about the tree in the middle of the garden. If you skip down to verse 6, When the woman saw that the tree looked like good eating and realized that she would get out of it, she'd know everything. So oftentimes we think that if we're going to miss out on something, it's almost an unconscious prompting that pushes us to do things sometimes that are not very Christian, let me use that in quotes, or not very ethical or not very moral. Satan was trying to convince Eve that God wasn't big enough. And I can only tell you from my own experience that there are times when you think that certain things can't happen, but you don't know that way before you started worrying about certain things not happening, the rules have changed in your favor that will enable you to receive the things that you've been wanting to receive, but you didn't think the rules would be able to be changed and altered for you. And I don't want to get into the depths of what I'm exactly specifically talking about in my life, but I think you can probably experience it in your own life when you think certain things were not possible, But the rules of the road, the society that you're in, or the situations that you're involved in, you didn't think could be molded and changed in a way that, in fact, they have been changed. So through the tone in this story, through the tone and the inflection of his voice, Satan implied that there was a doubt that God had told them the truth. How many times have you ever been in conversation with people and the inflection of the voice created some sort of hesitation, some sort of doubt in what you were thinking about? So she knew, Eve knew, from the inflection of that voice that he was really asking a question and casting doubt. So oftentimes, at least I can only speak for my life, that the older I get, the more careful I am about who I allow into my ear. If I would have known that as a young person or as a teenager even, I wouldn't have had nearly the amount of struggles that I've had over the years, because I didn't think about that. I wasn't careful about who I allowed into my ear, which then impacts how I behave. Satan immediately in this story minimized the penalty of not being obedient to the rules that God set in the story. He said clearly that you shall not die, which was the quote opposite of what God said was going to happen. So when humans don't have enough of something, that fact dominates our consciousness. That is, we dwell on what we don't have and minimize really what we do have. And that's a human aspect of life that, for those of us who know that that exists, we need to fight against that constantly. Because if we think about the lack, we then ignore the blessings. And when we ignore the blessings, then we don't really value what we have already. So greed shows up when there's an assumption of lack. Again, greed shows up when there's an assumption of lack or scarcity. How many times have you seen people in your own workplace or in your school or in your family or in your neighborhood who do things because they're afraid of not having, or they're afraid of missing out on something? They, again, I'll say it 10 times here today, they cross that line of ethics to do things that are not very, very good. So scarcity really mostly is an illusion. Because if you stop and think about life, those who really choose not to expand their vision about life, they live in a very finite world. How many people have you met who didn't know that certain things existed? And since they didn't know certain things existed, their little world was their little world. Whereas if you look beyond your walls, if you look beyond your world, then you see there's so much more that you have access to that you didn't think. Charles Einstein writes, "But because we live almost wholly in a culturally constructed world, our experience of this scarcity is quite real," he says. "Real enough that nearly a billion people today are malnourished, and some 5,000 children die each day from hunger-related illnesses. So our responses," he says, "to this scarcity and this anxiety and greed are perfectly understandable. When something is abundant," listen, "when something is abundant, no one hesitates to share it." When something is abundant, no one hesitates to share it. We live in an abundant world, made otherwise through our perceptions and culture. He goes on to say, our perception of scarcity is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Think about that. Our perception of scarcity is a self-fulfilling prophecy. I know I share this part of my life probably too often, but I was in between a point of yesterday, so I ran in the gym for half an hour to do some weights. And the normal weight that I would use to do my curls, I just walked up to the thing where I would get it from, and a guy got the weight and walked away with my weight, because there was only one barbell of that particular weight in the whole place, and he took it. So I had a choice of going down 10 pounds and not really working hard, or going up 10 pounds. And I've been avoiding that 10-pound bump for weeks, because that's an extra stuff on the end. I'm like, I can't do this. So then I was like, I'm not going to go down 10 pounds. So I went up 10 pounds and I found that, you know what, it wasn't nearly as hard as I thought it was going to be. So the point is that sometimes the stuff that you avoid isn't really as difficult as you think it might be, because you're already prepared to take on that bump, if you will, because of all the stuff you've done up to that point. So the fear of not having enough really is a critical form of leverage that then we settle for less than God's best. So the point is then I'll say it a different way maybe, when we think that God can only do so much in our lives, then we don't think beyond that. I'll say this again in maybe in another way, that rules are subject to change when you open your eyes to the potential of what can happen. Because when you think that the rules can't change for you, and I'm not talking biblical rules, I'm not talking, you know, what the Bible says you should and shouldn't do, I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying about life. Stuff that's been in writing for 40 years, you know, in your workplace is subject to change for your benefit. So don't think that because what is will always be. Rules can change in a way and at a time that comes your way that you can't even believe. Michael Neal shares, he says, the scarcer the resource, listen, the more we are willing to give up in order to get it. The more common the resource, the less we are willing to give up in order to get it. Maggie Haydock writes a very familiar story with an interesting twist, and I love stories, I love parables. Jesus taught parables and stories all the time to make points, to make sure that we remember certain concepts. And in this story, she writes, once upon a time, there were three pigs. When they turned 18, the little pigs left home to seek their fortune. Their first priority was finding shelter. The first pig built a house out of straw, and he found scattered on the ground. The second pig built a house out of sticks that he scavenged for in the woods. The third pig discovered an abandoned cache of bricks. At first, he was ecstatic. These would be perfect for a house, he thought. Then he got anxious. Who owned the bricks? What if they wouldn't give him permission to use them? What if they gave him permission but wanted him to pay more than he could afford? What if he did build a house of bricks and his brothers thought that he was stuck up and a show-off? It was all too much for the third little pig. In the end, he decided to live out in the open, taking shelter wherever he could find it. Enter the big bad wolf. One night, the big bad wolf, which loved to eat little piggies, attacked the first pig's house. Though the door was tightly latched, all the wolf needed to do was take a gigantic breath, and he huffed and puffed, and of course we all know what happened. He blew the house down. The first pig fled to his brother's stick house. Again, the wolf came calling. Again, he huffed and he puffed, and lo, he blew that house down as well. The two homeless little pigs ran frantically into the night, hoping to find shelter with their brother. Eventually, they found their equally homeless brother holed up inside a sewer pipe. The three pigs squeezed into the pipe, and working desperately, they managed to block the opening with a large boulder. For the time being, they were safe from the wolf. What a wise little piggy I am, reflected the brother from his damp, dark hiding place. As long as I keep moving, that old wolf will never get me. Of course, it wasn't very long before running and hiding and scavenging exhausted the three little piggies, and the wolf had a lovely little feast. What's wrong with this picture, the storyteller says. Ask any five-year-old, and they'll tell you there's something wrong with the story. We know, she writes, intuitively, that the pigs were supposed to have learned a lesson and lived to profit by it. Instead, we see the very pig that could have built the sturdy house of bricks, listen, turned his back on opportunity and settled for a life on the run because of scarcity thinking. I think so many of us really forget that we're capable of embracing and doing and accomplishing so much more, because then we cast doubt on our own self and our own intelligence and our own lack and our own whatever, and then we live a life that's far less than what we're capable of achieving. And that's really the big picture here of what this theme is really all about. There's a book that's been out for, I want to guess, more than 10 years by Bob Farrell. And, you know, I read a lot of stuff all the time. And the book is a funny, funny title. It's called Give Them the Pickle. Just give them the pickle. So the backstory behind this story is that he says, this is like a letter that prompted this book to be written. He said, I've been coming to your restaurant for over 3 years, and I always order a number 2 hamburger and a chocolate shake. I always ask for an extra pickle, and I always get one. Mind you, this has been going on for once or twice a week for 3 years. I came to your restaurant the other day, and I ordered my usual number 2 hamburger and a chocolate shake, and I asked the young waitress for an extra pickle. I believe she was new because I hadn't seen her before. She said, sir, I will sell you a side of pickles for $1.25. I told her, no, I just want one extra slice of pickle. I always ask for it and they always give it to me. Go ask your manager. She went away and came back after speaking to the manager. The waitress looked me in the eye and said, I'll sell you the pickle for a nickel. Mr. Farrell, I told her who this note was being written to, who owned that place. I told her what to do with her pickle, hamburger and milkshake. I'm not coming back to your restaurant if that's the way you're going to run it. So he signed his name, but fortunately for me, Bob Farrell was the owner, and he included his address. And the longer story short is this letter prompted this gentleman who owned this restaurant to not be so minutely finicky about scarcity, and teaching his people that if your customer wants a pickle, give them a pickle. How many times haven't you been to establishments, or you've been involved in relationships, or you've been in partnerships at work with colleagues to do certain projects, and there's a mindset that there's not enough to go around? Well, there's more than enough. There's infinitely much more to go around if, in fact, you decide in your own mind that there's more than enough. You know, I have a habit of telling myself a little bit. One of my temptations are Kit Kats. And every few weeks I'll go to the store and I'll buy 2 or 3 bags of Kit Kats, the little 2 or 4 bar kind. And I'll put them in the freezer, and I like them frozen, like them crunchy and cold. So, you know, on occasion I'll go to the freezer and get myself a Kit Kat. And if Christina is very close by, she'll give me the eye like, So I give her a Kit Kat, of course, because she's very sweet and kind. So we share a Kit Kat or two. And then when I run out of Kit Kats, it seems like a good percentage of my desire is to do what? Is to run to the store and get more Kit Kats, because I ran out of Kit Kats. In time, you eventually run out of Kit Kats. The point being, sometimes the desire for stuff that you don't need grows when what you really think that you need is no longer around. So it's really about a reframe. It's really about rethinking what you need. Is it really what you need, or is it really what you want? And so many times we get stuck on this need versus want philosophy. I had the opportunity to interview a gentleman at WCBM radio station this past week. And for those who don't know, I've been in, you know, there's a bucket list that you have, that a lot of us have, that they want to do before they die. They want to do certain things. Well, that was on my super secret bucket list that nobody even knew. My wife didn't even know that was one of my list, to go to this station and be at least on the air for a fraction of a moment, just before I die. That's what I wanted to do. So this guy I had met maybe 3 months ago or so, he wrote a book a couple years ago, and he's been trying to market the book. And he asked me, because we met for lunch one day, and he asked me if I would be interested in coming into the studio and interviewing him, and they're going to broadcast that on the air. I said, sure, because I've learned over the years that better things happen when you say yes to opportunities than say no. So even though you don't have a clue how to do it, you say yes. And many times opportunities grow when you say yes, but that's a whole new other text. So we're in the station. And during the conversation about this book, he was talking about the difference between needs and wants. so many times we redefine what our needs are and what our wants are. And that concept can literally change the way you see about life. If life is really scarce, if there's not enough to go around, or if there's plenty of Kit Kats in the store that you can go get them anytime you want to. You don't have to have this craving of something that you really shouldn't be eating anyway. Over in John chapter 6, the Living Bible puts it this way. In John chapter 6, starting in verse number 1, we've read this story, I can't tell you how many hundreds of times, but I want to frame it in this particular context. It says, after this, Jesus crossed over to the Sea of Galilee, also known as the Sea of Tiberias, and a huge crowd, many of them pilgrims on their way to Jerusalem for their annual Passover celebration, were following him wherever he went to watch him heal the sick. So when Jesus went up into the hills, and let me back up a sentence. So they were following him wherever he went to watch him heal the sick. Make note of that, because I'll come back to that in a few weeks. So not that you're going to remember that. So when Jesus went up into the hills and sat down with his disciples around him, he saw a great multitude of people climbing the hill looking for him. Turning to Philip, he asked, Philip, where can we buy bread to feed all these people? Because he was testing Philip, because it says that he already knew what he was going to do. Verse 7. Philip replied, it would take a fortune to begin to do it. Then Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, spoke up. It's always good to have somebody who speaks up in your life. Again, that's another text, another theme. There's a youngster here with 5 barley loaves and a couple of fish. What good is that with all of this mob? Think about this a minute. He first saw an abundant mentality, and then within a half a breath, it went back to a scarcity mentality. We have this, but what's that to all this? You understand? So it is truly a mind shift. It's a reframe of how you see stuff. Verse 10. Tell everyone to sit down, Jesus ordered. All of them. The approximate count of the men was about 5,000. They sat down on the grassy slopes. Verse 11. Then Jesus took the loaves and gave thanks to God and passed them out to the people. Now think about the order in which this happened. He took what he had. He took the little bit of what he had. He gave thanks for it. And then God multiplied after he gave thanks for it. There's some sort of lesson in there I haven't gotten my head quite around yet, but I wanted to kind of throw that out there. Afterward, he did the same with the fish, and everyone ate until full. Verse 12. Now gather the scraps. Think about this a minute. He only had a scarce amount of stuff. And then in verse 12, he says, now gather the scraps. Another text might say, gather the leftovers or whatever. In other words, they had more than they needed, even though they started out with far less than what they had, that they could even possibly stretch. How many times haven't you been in situations where you can't imagine how what you have is going to stretch to a point that's going to be more than enough? At least in my world, God can create stuff that gives you opportunities in your life that is more than enough, but you have to change your mindset. You have to reframe. I'll say that word often here today. You have to reframe what you have in order to see what's possible. Again, we're talking about scarcity. Verse 14 of the same chapter in John 6. When the people realized what a great miracle had happened, they exclaimed, surely he is the prophet we have been expecting. I would suggest to you, I think quite often, that people are moved by stuff that happens that is extraordinary. Sure, that's an obvious situation. But how many times haven't we limited life? Haven't we limited God in our lives? Haven't we limited relationships in our lives because we didn't think that the relationship or the agreement or the contract or the rules of engagement in whatever you're involved in can be changed, can be altered in a way that could benefit you and the people in your own life. So the crowd needed some sort of what one author calls it, social proof to embrace what had happened. If they were on Facebook, they would have had thousands and thousands of likes. I posted an update on Juliana Scans a week or so ago, or less than a week ago. And so far, between Facebook and YouTube, it's about now 26 or 27,000 views over just a 4-minute little video clip. Again, you don't know what one story, you don't know what one illustration, you don't know what one sentence or one example, one story, et cetera, can alter the lives of people in your own life when you have an abundance mentality. People are highly motivated by the thought that they might lose out on something. How many times haven't you in your own life done things, or at least let me say it a softer way. You've thought to do things because you thought that if you didn't do a certain thing that you weren't going to get it. How many times haven't you gone to the freezer and the ice cream was almost gone, and you decided to eat that bowl of ice cream because somebody else in the house was going to get it if you didn't get it, which you didn't know that the person who buys the ice cream was at the store at that moment getting more ice cream, if that makes any sense. Because you thought that it was gone, so you have to, even though you're going to get a bellyache, I mean, I've gotten bellyaches before eating too much stuff I shouldn't be eating because I thought that it wasn't going to be any more left. The whole point is here, life is not really about scarcity. It's our mindset about scarcity. There's always more than enough. Now, I'm not saying all the time that abundance is going to come to you and drag you down and chase you and pull you by the neck and bring you into this life of abundance. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm suggesting that oftentimes we have to hunt for it night and day. We have to bleed for it. We have to fight for it. Because if not, then it's not going to come find you. And that takes work. That takes a lot of effort. Seth Godin writes that scarcity creates value. Again, scarcity creates value. So if you want to have value, or at least create value in your life, then you have to live a life of at least perceived value, maybe in your own self. Because how many young people have you met that didn't think that they were all that, or they didn't think that they were going to ever find a spouse, or they weren't going to have a certain talent, or they didn't have any talents at all? I can remember, I'm not a huge fan of it, America's Got Talent. I'll watch it once in a blue moon, and not even a whole show. I'll walk into the room and the kids are watching it. And sometimes some of these people walk on the stage and their appearance is something that you wouldn't expect to hear something come out of their mouth that was beyond beautiful. Some of the Simon Cowell's looks that he gives some of these people, and the attitudes and the lack of respect that he gives some of these people when they come on stage. Maybe they're overweight, or maybe they're older, or maybe they have buck teeth or missing teeth or no teeth. But you know, he judges oftentimes based on appearances. He already judges this person doesn't have what it takes. Until sometimes, not all the time, mind you, as you know, but sometimes these people open their mouths and the beauty that comes out of their lungs and their vocal cords is beyond description. But what happens when you and I go through life? We look at people with that scarcity mentality. We judge them, really, you know, by what we see, by how they're behaving, what zip code they live in, what clothes they wear, even how they smell. You know, we judge them in a certain way instead of looking at their heart the way Jesus taught us to look at people. Over in, I'll get to that in a minute. Satan is called the great deceiver for a reason. Because deception works. Because oftentimes we really don't have a full picture of what we do have. Deception works because we don't have a true picture of what we do have. And I'm tempted to go down a certain road, but I'll leave that one alone. William Arthur Ward wrote a long time ago, 100 years ago, he wrote, "Nothing limits achievement like small thinking. Nothing limits achievement like small thinking. Nothing expands possibilities like unleashed imagination." Now stop and think about that in your own life. What you think is impossible, by the way, is impossible. Because if you think certain things are impossible, then you're not even going to travel down a road of possibility, because why go down the road of possibility when you believe in your heart of hearts that it's no sense in doing it anyway because it is impossible? And again, that I could expand to that example being on the station that we're on right now, that for a long time, for a number of years, I didn't think that we had the potential or the opportunity to be on this station. But situations changed and conversations happened and, you know, relationships got built, and we're here on this station right now as a result of not having a scarcity mindset. So what's possible in your own life when you take the limitations off, like we heard earlier this morning, when we take the limitations off and say, you know what, anything's possible in our lives if we believe that anything's possible in our lives. Somebody says you believe life is permanent and not seeing images as temporary but fixed in some way, believing that you know that's just the way it is. I think you and I have fallen into that mindset more times than not, that because the way things are now is the same way it's going to be next year and tomorrow and in 5 years down the road. This person says, you can't see new opportunities when you come from a scarcity mentality because you believe that things will never change. Abundance mentality seems like as dynamic and in a constant flux. I'm reminded often of Muhammad Ali. And if you read the behind-the-scenes conversations of Muhammad Ali with other people, you wouldn't know it by looking at Muhammad Ali, even in his prime, but he had substantial self-doubt. He had substantial personal demons in his own life that he was trying to overcome. So how he overcame it was always giving his ear to people that would, for the lack of a better term, pump him up. And as you know, if you've read any of his stuff or watched him on TV over the years, he would say things like, I am the greatest. I am the greatest. And there's some, I should have brought many quotes, but something like, you know, stinging like a bee, and he'd get up and hit the light switch to go to bed and be back in bed before the light went out. I mean, stuff like that. I mean, he would talk this talk, but you think that he was arrogant. You would think that he was proudful and boastful. But really, he was psyching himself up because he had some serious personal self-doubt. And I think that's a lesson for a lot of us, and that's used in many forms in so many cultures, and lots of scriptures talk about that in the Bible. How oftentimes we have to talk ourselves into believing things that maybe you wouldn't believe if you didn't hear it come out your own mouth. Does that make any sense at all? Because if you say it, it tends to be true. If other people say it, sometimes there's a doubt behind it. So the more you speak, if you speak life, if you speak faith, if you're very careful what you allow out of your mouth, again, the older I get, I'm so careful what I let out of my mouth, because there are most days I want to let a barrage of negativity come out of my mouth. But the moment it comes out of my mouth, my ear hears it, and then what happens is my brain starts making what I'm doubting, or that negative concept that comes out of my mouth, my brain starts to make that happen. So I need to be very careful. It's a psychological thing that I'm not going to get into here, but it's very important what you allow to leave your lips. You have enough doubts going on in your head. Your ears don't need to hear that, not only from you, but from other people in your life. So oftentimes, when you have a scarcity mentality, you hoard or hold on to things. My wife is a great example of not being a hoarder. She says, if, John, you haven't touched it in a year, why do you keep it? For several years, I used to collect newspapers of major events. So in the basement, I have, I would say conservatively, two good-sized boxes of newspapers of significant events, whether it's the Berlin Wall coming down, or a number of other things, Cal Ripken beating the 2-1-3-1 hit record or whatever it was. I have several copies of that. Diana passing away in the car accident in 97. I have several periodicals of that. TV Guide covers with Star Trek on it and Star Wars on it. And she's like, John, this has taken up space. I'm a hoarder. I'm thinking maybe one day this is going to be worth something. So I'm hoping and praying that one day I'm going to remember to go in there and it's now worth this. This one newspaper is worth $1,000. So I hoard stuff. Listen, it doesn't make sense, does it? But you think I'm throwing it away? It ain't happening. You know, I get a divorce first. It ain't happening. You know what I'm saying? So you and I hold on to stuff that really, my English is fading me here, that really doesn't matter in the long run of life. But if you get rid of it, then there's an emotional response, isn't it? It's an emotional response of loss, that potential could be worth something, and it's really not worth anything. I've got more stuff, more examples that I have in my basement. That's why it's in my basement, put away. Sometimes we make small gestures of scarcity, like you tip a server who deserves a good tip less than what the person deserves, because you think that you might not need that extra $1.10 tomorrow, or you might, let me say it a different way, that you might need that extra $1.10 tomorrow. So you live a life with other people because you internally are afraid of not having enough, and that's a storyline I'll leave alone. There's a story in the Old Testament about that we've read here countless times about this giant warrior who believed that this little shepherd boy was going to come to him and do battle with him. In fact, back in that culture, Malcolm Gladwell writes that in that time, several thousand years ago, wars were won sometimes with something called a single combat, where the best of the best would come to a certain place, and the other side would bring their best of the best, and whoever won that single combat would leave the champion. So there would be a lot less bloodshed, a lot less of damage, and this and that going on. Well, there was a very interesting sentence in this story where Goliath, the mighty warrior, said, "Am I a dog that you should come to me with sticks?" So already this giant warrior who had probably slain many, many people, already, if you will, stereotyped David, as this story is about, in a certain way, in a certain light. I go back to America's Got Talent, right? This David walks out on stage, and Simon Cowell / Goliath looks at David and chuckles under his breath. Even in the actual story, laughs out loud and says, "How, you know, who do you think you are?" So this is what Goliath was expecting, you know, at least to have a peer come out to him, at least somebody with some experience. Goliath probably didn't know the backstory of David, that David had just, you know, hung around and been a servant, if you will, been taking care of some sheep. But as we read in the story deeper, we all know the story, how David told some people, "Look, you know, I killed a lion and a bear, and I'm cool." He didn't use these words. "So what is Goliath to me when I can handle these wild beasts?" So King Saul in the story, we're not going to read the story because we've read it here 100 times, but King Saul had a scarcity mentality. King Saul said that you have to match strength for strength. So if Goliath's in his armor, then you need to match Goliath's armor with at least some armor, because a shepherd doesn't carry armor. I would suggest to you that you don't have to always match armor for armor. You don't have to always match system for system. You don't have to always match how people are doing things with how you're doing things. Because sometimes in the right connection, in the right relationships, in the right power, in the right abundance mentality, you supersede what always has been for so many years. King Saul and his army was intimidated by the size and the armor and the probably this term isn't correct, but the verboseness, is that a word, or the verbose tone of Goliath, this warrior? How many times haven't you been scared out of your shoes by the verbose volume of people or situations in your life that you don't even want to try something? You don't even want to attempt to embrace it because it looks so scary and so intimidating. So actually in that culture, an experienced slinger or shepherd could kill or seriously injure a target at a distance of up to 200 yards. Goliath may not have known what talent David had. I wonder how many of us in our lives, we look at things two different ways. We look at people in our own lives and don't realize what talent they may have, and then we judge accordingly, we behave accordingly, we build relationships or don't build relationships accordingly. And then if you flip that coin over, how many times haven't you been viewed or judged or stereotyped by people who are in armor, or they have titles, or they have experience, and they think that you don't have what it takes to get it done because you're approaching them in a way that is different than what they're used to? Does that make any sense to anybody at all here today? So David, listen, David sees the potential of a victory while Saul sees it as a definite defeat. It's a reframe. It's how you see. It's how you can imagine. It's what you expect, because what you expect oftentimes happens. So if you expect defeat, if you expect loss, then you're going to behave in such a way. So if you expect or are looking for victory, then you're going to find ways to make victory happen. Does that make any sense at all? So if you're out looking for certain things to happen in your lives, then you need to look for certain things to happen in your life. You don't just shut down and go to sleep, or you turn it off, or you just, you know, veg for the rest of your life. No, because you're looking for things to happen. How many times haven't you, I've used this example too, bought a car, and as soon as you bought the car, everybody's got that car. Wow, how can everybody have that same car I have now? Well, it didn't. You just noticed it more because you have it. You see, when you look for opportunities, when you look for the stuff that you really want to have happen, you see it all around you, and then you have ways to embrace it. So in this story, it says, "You've come against me with a sword and a spear and a javelin," David said to this mighty warrior. But David said, "But I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, listen, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will do," listen, "this day the Lord, the God, will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down." He didn't just stop there. He says, "But then I'll cut off your head." All those gathered here will know that this is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands. So he wasn't just talking to Goliath. His voice was going past Goliath to the people behind Goliath that were watching for Goliath to kick David's behind, right? So David was saying, you know, even though you come to me with all this stuff, God's going to deliver me because I am where I need to be when I need to be there. Now, that's a big mind shift for a lot of people. To be in the right place at the right time causes stuff to happen that wouldn't happen if you didn't place yourself in a situation that maybe when you first looked at it would scare you to death. Let me be kind with my adjectives. That would scare you so much that you couldn't imagine yourself in that situation 3 months prior. But now that you're there, you believe that you're there for a purpose. And for you being there for a purpose, then some great things can happen to you. Malcolm Gladwell writes, "Courage is not something that you already have that makes you brave when the tough times start." He says, "Courage is what you earn when you've been through the tough times and you discover that they aren't so tough after all." Like I said with the weights earlier. You know, I was intimidated by going up another 10 pounds because in that particular weight, there's another weight on either side. That's a little intimidating for a 167-pound guy, right? So I'm thinking, how can I possibly lift? But then when sometimes, listen, There's a lesson here, I think. When oftentimes you have no choice, you can either backslide or you can step up, pun intended. You can either step up or backslide. It's so easy to backslide, isn't it? It's really not only in the religious Pentecostal word, but to slip back into mediocrity. Man, it's a lot harder and a lot more intimidating to step up and purposely lift something that you didn't think that you could lift. And then you realize, you know what? Why was I avoiding this in the first place? Right? Malcolm Gladwell goes on to say, he says, you can't concentrate on doing anything if you're thinking, what's going to happen if it doesn't go right? I'll say it again. You can't concentrate on doing anything if you're thinking, what's going to happen if it doesn't go right? I'll say it again, that you and I are in control of our thoughts. So if you believe that what you're going to attempt is going to fail, guess what's going to happen? It's going to fail. If you believe that you're going to get out there in the field of battle and you're going to take down the mightiest of the mighty, guess what's going to probably happen? You're going to take down the mighty of the mighty. So it's really, it all starts right here between your ears. Over in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, it says, whatever your hands find to do, listen to this, do it with all your might. Now that should mess with a lot of us, but I'll leave that alone. I'll say it again though. Whatever your hands finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no activity or planning or knowledge of wisdom in Sheol or hell where you're going. Again, I saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle is not to the warriors, and neither is bread to the wise, nor wealth to the discerning, nor favor to men of ability. For time and chance overtake them all. It says, moreover, man does not know his time like fish caught in a treacherous net. And then it goes on to say that you know what, you have, and my paraphrase is, that you have to keep going anyway. You have to keep moving forward even though what you think is happening around you isn't really reality. Because what you perceive becomes your reality. What I perceive becomes my reality. If you want to turn over to Psalm 34, Psalm 34, the Living Bible puts it in a, I think, an easier way for me to understand over in Psalm 34, starting in verse 8. It says, oh, put God to the test and see how kind he is. See for yourself the way his mercies shower down on all who trust him. If you belong to the Lord and reverence him, for everyone who does this has everything he needs. Even strong young lions sometimes go hungry. For those of us who have reverence for the Lord will never lack any good thing. Verse 11. Sons and daughters, come and listen. Let me teach you the importance of trusting and fearing the Lord. Do you want a long good life? Then watch your tongue. Keep your lips from lying. Verse 14. Turn from all known sin and spend your life in doing good. Try to live at peace with everyone and work hard at it. So God has all you need to do for all you need to do. But if you don't believe that you have all you need to do, then you're gonna live in this little tiny box, and your world's going to be in this little tiny box, and you're going to behave like little mice in a little maze, that you think that that's all life is, when in reality there's so much more out there, but we have to go looking for it. The old story I've shared before here, Who Moved My Cheese, a great book, that you know people had to get out of their little comfort zone to get out there and find new cheese. It's a great book. Again, Who Moved My Cheese? Get it, by Spencer Johnson. Great book. Little book, but powerful little book. It enables you to understand that eventually things are going to change. And if you don't change, if I don't change, then life, you're going to run out of cheese pretty quickly, right? Even though that you have little, God can take and make much out of little. But you have to be willing to offer the little. And that's what I've been trying to teach our kids and others for a long time, that you can't hoard what you have. Because if you hoard what you have, then how can life and how can God bless and magnify and grow what you have? if that makes any sense. So we get to be, sometimes people, at least maybe me too, we get clingy that what we have can't grow, or we get have a hoarding mindset that if we let stuff go, then we're going to lose out, or we're not going to have. So Michael Hyatt writes, as I close, the question is this: what type of thinker are you? Maybe it's time to do some self-honest self-evaluation, he says. Better yet, ask those closest to you. He lists a couple things. He says, people who have an abundance mindset, number one, they believe there's always more where that came from. There's always more where that came from. Number two, they are happy to share their knowledge, their contacts, and compassion with others. These are words from Michael Hyatt. Again, the first one, they believe there is always more where that came from. Number two, they are happy to share their knowledge and contacts and compassion with others. Number three, they default to trust and build rapport easily. That's a tough one for me these days, I'll tell you flat out. They default to trust and build rapport easily. Number four, they welcome competition, believing it makes the pie bigger and makes them better. Again, that's a total mind shift from the scarcity person, right? Number five, they ask themselves, how can I give more than is expected? Now that is a complete opposite of the person who has a scarcity mentality, right? Again, they ask themselves, how can I give more than is expected? Not, what can I get away with? What's the least I can do to get credit for doing it? That's not what a person with abundance mentality thinks. Number six, they are optimistic about the future, believing the best is yet to come. Because, again, I'll say it for the fourth or fifth time here today, you got to be careful what leaves your mouth. Because what leaves your mouth goes into both of your ears, and then your brain starts to make what you just said that went into your ears to make that a reality. That's another sermon. Number seven, they think big and they embrace risk. Again, they think big and they embrace risk. And finally, he says, they are thankful and confident. They are thankful and confident. So in summary, God has more for you than you can possibly imagine. So as the song said before we started to record the text here today, take the limitations off. Stretch yourself. So to go to areas in your life that maybe you wouldn't have considered before and watch some amazing things happen that you didn't think could happen to you because you decided to go there and do that, even though in the process, internally, because you're not going to verbalize it because we just talked about that, but internally you're filled with tons of self-doubt, but you know that if you don't extend yourself to do certain things, then certain things aren't going to happen. So it's paramount. It's important for you and I not to fall into that scarcity trap and do what's scary until scary is not scary anymore. I'm so fired up about my fourth book that came out. It's called Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks for a Successful and Rewarding Life. I've compressed about 25 years of knowledge and experience and learning from a lot of people to help you in your life. You can get a copy of it over at TremendousLifeBooks.com. Again, TremendousLifeBooks.com. Here's some more information about it. For the last 25 years, I've visited with thousands of people in their homes. Many of these people I've met with have no goals, no dreams, no ambitions, and no roadmap for their life. I've seen so many people sitting on their front porches watching life go by. In 2006, my wife and I started building our home with bedrooms for each of our six kids. I always made sure that the foundation of our home was solid. I didn't want to take any chances with the lives of my family. So it is with life.
My book, Build Your Foundation, 68 Building Blocks of a Successful, Rewarding Life, is jammed full of ideas that can help you today. My book is a collection of ideas and short stories really designed to help you turn your life around and to help impact the people that you care about and that you love so much. Whether you're just beginning to lay your foundation or you've already built your life but need to shore up some weak spots, Build Your Foundation will help you fortify yourself for a lifetime of success and to give you the courage to go for your dreams in life. Don't miss out on what you can accomplish. You can scale any height and achieve any goal. This book will help you get there. I have a passion to help millions of people change their lives. This book is easy to read, has short chapters, and can help you right now and change your life today. I believe in you. Thank you so much for listening to the John Carver Show. If you want more information about me, just simply go to my website, www.johnwcarver.com. Again, thanks so much for listening to the show today, and remember, I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the John Carver Show. Please tune in again right here Monday through Friday for more insights and opinions on how you can reach your goals and dreams in life.